Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for tonight, we're going to be talking about a sobering but very important topic, and that is recovering from childhood sexual trauma. So please feel free to participate or just to listen. We have a very brave lady who's going to share her story tonight, and I will share a little bit of mine. And for now, let me welcome my co-host, Kat Edwards. Kat, how are you tonight?
Hi, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. Surviving what has been a really, really hot day here in the northeastern United States. But I've stayed inside. I've walked out to let the dogs out a couple of times, and that was enough for me.
No, goodness.
Yeah. It's the kind of day where you could fry an egg on the asphalt. It's really that hot.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah. But at any rate, as I said, we do have a serious topic tonight, and we haven't been afraid to explore other topics that are of a serious nature. And we'll try to lighten things up a little bit for next week. But, you know, childhood sexual trauma is so prevalent and such a horrible situation to happen to a child. Is there anything that you've uncovered in your research that you'd like to briefly share?
Yeah, so I would recommend darknesstolight.org, D2L. For Larry, D for David, number two, L for Larry.org, as a great resource for learning and understanding about childhood sexual trauma. So, according to them, 1 in 10 children will be sexually abused before the age of 18. Child sexual abuse is more prevalent than people realize. 60% of child sexual abuse victims never tell anyone. And there's a lot of privacy issues surrounding cases of child sexual abuse that influence reported data. So of the children who are abused, 20% are abused before the age of 8. And so most people think that adult rape is a crime of great proportion, but there's also a greater significance in the amount of children who are raped and victimized. And personally, when I think about that and I think about how a rapist is put to jail for 10 to 15 years, but somebody who's been done for pedophilia or sexually abusing a child, they're often only put to jail for 3 to 4 years and then out with, you know, on probation after 18 months. That to me is disgusting. That why you would go to jail for raping a 19-year-old, yet raping a 16-year-old or an 8-year-old will only get you 3 years, whereas if you did the 19-year-old or the 30-year-old, you'd be into jail for 10 to 15. There's a massive problem there, and I think that it is something that goes across a lot of countries, not just my country. And it's, you know, the kind of long-term trauma and wrecking of lives that happens to somebody because they've been victimized as a youth should be reflected in the punishment, in my opinion. Sexual abuse statistics show that perpetrators are often children know who the perpetrators are. 90% of children, I'll say that again, about 90% of children are aware of their victim, of their abuser. 60% of children who are sexually abused are abused by family members that either the child trusts, and that's a massive betrayal, or the family trusts. Often adolescent sex offenders are not sexual predators and will not go on to become adult offenders. So that is something interesting. One of the reasons that happens is that if they're found to have committed a sexual offence, they're more open to treatment and they will not reoffend as adults. So there must be a lot of remorse and willingness to learn from adolescent sex offenders. And also, not everyone who sexually abuses a child is a pedophile. So they've got a distinct difference. But as many as 40% of children who are sexually abused are abused by older, more powerful children. And we found there's a case recently up in the northern parts of Australia where a five-year-old was raped by a gang of youths on a beach. And what they're saying here is that often children can be offended against by groups of older, more powerful children rather than a single person. So it just depends. I know somebody who was sexually abused by three children, two egged them on and one did the abusing. And I know somebody else who was sexually abused by an older child when he was 10. So it just depends, I guess, on the circumstances there. As I said, I'm reading some statistics. So 70% of child sex offenders have between 1 and 9 victims, while 20% have 10 to 14 victims. And that there I'm talking about pedophiles. So they, in particular, are people who have a sick vision of a relationship with a child, or they just like to victimise children. But often pedophiles will think that there's some sort of relationship that they're having with the child and that it's a love affair. And they will groom the child and then they will start offending the child. I could go on, but I don't know how much you want me to talk about the academic side of it, or how much you want to go into experience and how it's been healed for you and for our guests.
Let's go to Jackie, and then I will share, and then we can come back and talk about that. We do have another caller on the line, and I don't know if they just want to listen or if they have anything they would like to share. I'm just going to touch base with that caller to find out what their first name is only. I don't mean to intimidate you at all. I just wanted to welcome you to the show and let you know that we're glad you're here. And this is area code 480. What is your first name, please?
This is Ann, David. I was just listening.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
I couldn't get things to work on my computer to listen in, so I called in and just thought I'd listen that way.
Thank you, Ann. Okay. We welcome you, and thank you for supporting us tonight. So with that said, I'm going to mute your microphone and bring Jackie live. Hi, Jackie. How are you tonight?
Hi, David. I'm just wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for agreeing to share. Please go ahead and tell us what you'd like to tell us.
Well, I was so gracefully asked by you to be a guest and to speak about my life story, which I am a survivor of child sexual abuse. My story starts when I was 4. It was my grandfather who was the first person to sexually abuse me. At that point, I was not introduced to intercourse. I was only introduced to the fondling. At 4 years old, I really don't think I knew at that age what was happening or what was going on. It really just was kind of a blur to me. I just remember that it was in Connecticut. It was my grandfather. And time kind of just blacks out after that. And the next phase of my sexual abuse was when I was 6. And it was my father's brother, which is my uncle. And again, thank God it wasn't intercourse. It was oral sex and manual, not that that's any better, but that was devastating enough for me. And what was very scary for me was at that time he had told me if I told anybody, he would kill me. And I'm a six-year-old child at that point. And this is somebody that would come around into the family. It was my father's brother. You know, my father's father and my father's brother would always come up for Sunday dinner. They were very close with my mother and my father at the time. So it was nothing for me to see them every weekend. After the abuse with my uncle, I knew at six, wait a minute, something's wrong. This isn't right. This doesn't feel right. And you're scaring me. And now I can't tell my parents. So I would have to put up with him coming to the house on the weekends after that and making me, you know, sit on his lap and having him be loving to me that in any other normal circumstances would seem normal to somebody. They would never know that he violated me sexually. And that made me very uncomfortable. It took me 6 years until the age of 12 when I realized my parents were cheating on one another, seeing other people, and splitting up their marriage that I finally broke my silence to my mother. Because as a child at age 12, I'm thinking this was my fault that they were getting divorced because I was sexually abused. I had let my uncle do what he did to me, and I didn't say anything. That's how a child thinks. So at age 12, yes, I told my mother, and she flipped out, obviously, and took me to a child psychologist at the time because I'm an only child. So when she right away went to my father and explained to my father, Jackie just told me that your father and your brother did this to her. My father's response was, oh, she's an only child. She just is looking for attention. She's telling a story. Now, you have to understand, I had no older brothers. I never saw my father naked. My parents never had dirty magazines or Playboy magazines or anything in the house like that. I grew up in the country, played outside all of my childhood. So I had a very wholesome childhood, except for these two experiences. So when my mother took me to this child psychologist, again, a lot of this is blacked out, but certain questions that she asked, she knew that I wasn't lying. She knew that I was telling the truth. So when my mother came back to my father to confront him, the divorce really blew up at that point. I mean, I think there was major trouble before that, but this was just the catalyst to break the straw on the camel's back. So now my parents are divorcing, hating one another. My mother is a serious alcoholic at this time. My father's already an alcoholic. And I go through my young teenage years, you know, age 12, 13, 14, you know, starting to get beat up and bullied by kids. I think, you know, between my parents' breakup and what had happened to me years previous, I just had no self-esteem or self-confidence. And my mother got custody of me in the divorce, but really could not take care of me. She would be hungover in the mornings. I'd have to get up and get ready for school, and she could not care for me. So I felt like I was betraying her because she was the only one that believed me, but I knew my soul must have known that she could not care for me, and there would just be more devastation that would come if I would stay. She was also at that time hooked up with a man that was probably 25 years, 30 years her senior, so that wasn't going very well either for me and my relationship with him. Not that he tried to sexually abuse me, he didn't, but he was very jealous of me, very angry with me. I was in the way. So I went back to live with my father, who was getting married to a woman who seemed to have her life together. She seemed healthier than my mother. She didn't drink. She smoked. But she also had a son that was 4 years older than me. And I thought to myself, okay, here's a family unit. I'll be safe there. And I was safe. I mean, it wasn't like I had any other sexual abuse at that point, but it wasn't safe in many other ways. So I went through high school, graduated high school, and went to beauty school. And when I got done with beauty school, I kind of just really rebelled and went, got as far away from my father and my stepmother because she was very jealous of me and very mean to me, and I really never bonded with her son, my stepbrother. So that whole illusion never turned out to be what I thought it would be. And as I was going through my young 20s, I was very promiscuous with boys that were older than me. I always dated guys that were 10, 12 years older than me. So going through life with that, I got married for the first time at age 24, really just to marry this man to spite my father. At this point now, the rebellion of the abuse of my father not doing anything. I mean, I kind of skipped over that, but my father just kind of put blinders on. He never prosecuted my uncle or my grandfather. When my mother confronted him, he never did anything about it. Just, he blew it off, and he never believed me. So now here I am at 24, and I'm just going to spend all his money and have a real expensive $20,000 wedding at the time, and just marry this guy. And my father said, oh, you'll never be able to settle down. You're boy crazy. And so I married my first husband out of spiting my father. That lasted a year. 2-3 years later, I met my second husband. My first husband was an alcoholic, so there you go. Just following the footsteps of my parents, you know. And so my second husband wasn't an alcoholic. He ended up being married to me for 6 years. He is the father of my one child that I have. I have a beautiful daughter who's going to be 22 next month. And so we were married for 6 years. We had her, and that whole relationship was very codependent. He tried to control me in some ways that just wasn't ever going to happen for me. So that marriage ended at 28. I meet my third husband, and I think, you know, this is it. And we get married, and I become a very successful entrepreneur. I finally feel like, oh, I have my life together here, and life is going good, and I owned several hair salons, and I was running triathlons at the time, and really, I think, trying to run from something. I think looking back in my life, I was definitely trying to work through all of this, but not realizing what this was. During all these years with my husbands, I'm more and more estranged from my father. My mother passes away when I'm 35, right before I married my third husband. And before that time, my mother and I had a very volatile relationship. She blamed me for the divorce because I came out with the dirty, dark family secret of me being molested by her brother-in-law and her father-in-law. So I lived with this guilt for many, many, many years. And by the time I turned 40, it was right around the 2008-2009 economic crash. And basically my entire empire of what I worked so hard for in the salons was falling apart. The economy was just tanking, and I was losing everything. And it was a very dark time for me because this was my dream. I had it. I worked hard. I was successful, but not in the industry long enough, owning all the salons that I did, that I could keep going in such an economic decline. So just like anything in life, you never expect, or you don't even know sometimes how you walk into things. But what I want to really share, and what I think is so pivotal for me, you're talking somebody that's 4 or 6 years old being sexually molested, and it really didn't manifest strongly for me until I was probably 40. And I was so devastated from losing my success, losing money. I had a very unhealthy relationship with money. My father would just throw money at me to shut me up. That was his way of making me go away and shut me up. I'll just give her money, she'll be happy, and that'll be that. And so when I was 40 and I lost my entire career and my business, and my name kind of went into the mud in the community that I was well known for, that shame piece came back. And one particular night I went on a website and found this sugar daddy website. And for the next 10 years, I went into a lifestyle of living dual life. There would be people in my life that would know me that I would be one way, you know, this sweet, nice, generous person, professional. But the dark side of me was seeing men and seeing them for money. The more successful of the man I could find, the more money I could get, then the more worthy I felt, then the more conquering and in command I felt, the more I could play with their mind, the more that I could manipulate them and get out of them what I wanted, the more successful I felt, the better I felt about myself. So this went on. I'm married a third time at this point, and this is going on for 10 years. Unbeknownst to my husband, at one point I did come clean and told him once, but then, you know, he dealt with that somehow by a miracle. I'm not sure even how he came through that. But then just went right back into it. I didn't trust him. I didn't trust God. I didn't trust anybody else, but knowing what I knew, and that was to use my gifts of my street smarts and my looks, my sexuality, I felt that's where love came from. And I knew the game I was playing, and I knew it was dangerous. There were many times that I should not be here still. I should have been raped, killed, diseased, something. It's a miracle by God that I never did, except the damage that came from it was just of my own self. As the years went on, I started to have night sweats. I started to have panic attacks. I started to feel demons all around me. I started to think I was basically literally dying. Worse than that is that my own daughter came to know what I was doing, and I was actually feeding a lifestyle for her with this money from these men of what I was doing, because at the time I felt that she loved her father more than me, and so I tried to buy her love with this money. So I was in total competition energy at that time as well. So now not only do I have myself wrapped up in this lifestyle, but now I have my 18, 19, 20-year-old daughter wrapped up into it. And her father knew about it. And I guess I felt safe letting them know, although it was very devastating for them to watch me do this. It was very scary for them. And I don't know exactly what the moment was, but 2 years ago is when I just started to say, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And inside, my ego self was very scared because I have an expensive lifestyle. I own horses. I had a business. I had equipment. I had a reputation. I was in the community. I was very well known. And I thought, there's no way I can't live with this X amount of money that I'm getting per month. And I don't know what to say, David, other than just one day, I guess it was just my soul self that said, or basically I really do feel it was God. I feel I was on a cliff. I feel if one more time I went out there onto a site, picked up a man, that was going to be it. And I felt that it was that proverbial God pulling me back by the cuff of my collar of my shirt to say, you know, because I'm ready to take that step. And if I take that step, I'm not going to survive it. And I just one day said, I can't do this anymore. I just basically had this breakdown. I said, I cannot do this anymore. I can't do this to my husband, who's been loyal, loving, supportive. I mean, he was going through his own issues as well, like any marriage, but the fact was he didn't deserve this. My daughter didn't deserve watching her mother do this. I didn't deserve this. I knew that I was loved by God, even though I didn't feel it, and I knew I had to stop. It just had to stop. It was really driving me insane, making me sick from the inside out, physically, emotionally. And finally, one day, I just took that leap of faith, and I stopped. And it's taken 2 years now where I sold everything that I once thought defined me as a person, what I once thought gave me security of who I am as a person, what I once thought what people would accept me for, or that they only liked me because I had money. A lot of people didn't know where this money came from. I lied. I would lie. I would come up with such really extraordinary lies that people would buy. And that was, I felt like I was in command of that too. Like, oh, I can lie and look at these people. They believe me. I must be worthy because I can do this.
So the consequences of the sexual abuse you experienced as a child and the dysfunctional household that you were in with the alcoholism and the disbelief from your father, that led you to a place where you became a person that you didn't like. Is that right?
I guess, Kat, in the big scheme of things, I guess it wasn't that I didn't like. I think I just didn't feel. I think the more in tune is, I didn't feel worthy. I didn't feel like I was good enough for anybody in my life or anybody in the community, even though I was successful on the outside world, having a wonderful business. I didn't feel worthy because unless I was manipulating these men and messing with their minds and giving them what they wanted sexually, I mean, that was a no-brainer for me. I knew sex because I've known it since I was four. I was taught very early. So I felt like it was the dysfunction of my father, the no protection or true love for my father. I was hurting a lot of men in the world. I mean, they were playing the game as well, but I was certainly manipulating a lot of people. A lot of these men didn't even know I was married. They thought I was single. They thought I was, you know, I needed this money. And I played them. So I think I felt not worthy more so than, and maybe that totally connects with not liking yourself. I don't even think I was in tune with that I didn't like myself. I think the more I was doing this, maybe the more I did like myself in a twisted kind of way. But I guess I would agree with you.
Have you come, how have you come to a place where you've started the healing journey? Because you can't be talking about it today if you've not come to that place. You said that you sold everything, and you at one point said, I've had enough. I'm not doing this anymore. And that was when you looked at your daughter and you realized the kind of circumstances you'd found her in. So can you tell us about your healing journey? Because that's really the topic of today, is how we heal from childhood sexual trauma. Because obviously, you know, you can, when we look at your life story, we can see how it just spun you out of a wholesome life as a child on the outside, even though you were going through these things with your uncle and your grandfather, which were far from wholesome. You ended up finding yourself on a journey of rebellion and doing things that maybe you never thought you would do when you were younger. So you've got to come to a place of healing, compassion towards yourself and love towards yourself, as well as healing the greater picture and reviewing the perpetrators in your life with a dispassionate compassion, so that you don't re-traumatize yourself when you think of them. How have you got to that place of forgiveness within yourself, or are you indeed still on that journey?
I think somebody of childhood sexuality, I think I'm at a very good place in my healing, but I think it's something you will most likely carry with you. I think it's a continual journey of healing because it has many, many layers to it. Many layers. And so for my sake, it's got layers of knowing that I just knew I had to forgive my father. Now, my father's still alive. The other two men, my grandfather and my uncle, have both passed away. I've forgiven their souls. I've forgiven myself. I mean, forgiveness is the key. I knew that I had to, I know that at this time I cannot go to my father and sit him down and have the conversation that I'm having in public, which this is my first time I've ever spoken of this in public. So I know that he doesn't have the tools and he's not capable. So what I've had to do is pray with my soul to my father's soul to say, I love you and I forgive you. I've also done some research on my, I've had somebody help me do some research on who my father was as a child and his upbringing, some things I didn't know in the family dynamics. When I found out what my father was exposed to, what he was manipulated with money to do, it brings such a wide understanding of the person that you're supposed to feel so protected by. I mean, you know, daddy's little girl. I'm supposed to look up to my father and he's supposed to be my everything, my king, my protector. But when I came to find out in my later years that he himself was abused in certain ways, maybe not sexually, but he was manipulated with money to have these things happen, even to me. How can my soul and heart not feel such pity and sorry for him? Because he's still living with it. I'm able to release it and let it go. A big part of my healing came from God, from me. I did go to therapy. I did speak about it in therapy, although not as vivid as I'm speaking to the world tonight. My last past 2 years have been a very deep healing journey for me. God has been the one that has shown me how worthy I am all by myself with none of this nonsense in my life, how much he loves me, how much I am worth to other people, how much other people do love me and care for me. So a lot of prayers, a lot of introspect, praying, a lot of doing some background history on my parents. I was lucky to be able to have help with that. That really opened up a lot of doors for me. What's so important is going forward is to be able to tell my story over and over again, if need be, to help anybody out there that has gone through this, that feels it's your fault, that feels you're not worthy. I'm here to tell you that's not true. I'm here to tell you that I was innocent. Any child of sexual abuse is innocent. Any adolescent's innocent. It's not something that should ever be violated. But to have a deeper understanding of the situation or your person that violated you, that is key. Forgiveness is key. For me, finding God was key. That's some of the pieces of why I'm able to sit here tonight and discuss this.
Yeah, I think that that's a very mature perspective, especially looking into the background of your parents. And we often have a wound from our parents to understand who they are and where they came from and why they grew up the way that they did and parented you the way that they did is very important. And I commend you for looking into them and understanding why. Yeah, you know, why did your father react the way that he did? That's really great. And you know, for me as a spiritual teacher, I talk about spirituality as being connection, and it's connection to the greater universe, the creation of the universe, and the creator of the universe. And being an animal in that ecosystem, and knowing that you're part of it all, and to reconnect into that is. Really, really important, because when we go through abuse, we can often disconnect and completely isolate ourselves from the greater reality. And it's really, really commendable that you reconnected, you plugged back in, and you started to seek support through trauma counseling. David, you've had some problems in your past with childhood sexual abuse as well. I know in your memoirs you've discussed it, and in particular I remember reading about a boy in your neighbourhood who attacked you, and it's been a few years since I read that. Was there a group of boys that attacked you, or was it just the one boy?
Well, as far as that goes, there were a pair of brothers that molested me, but I'd like to share a little bit more of the story, because that was a piece I remembered. The larger part is what I had not remembered, and that came to me years later. And it shows how some children disassociate from trauma to protect themselves and to go out of their bodies, which is what I believe I did do. And even though I felt like I had a happy childhood, I did not have self-worth. And so I can really relate to what Jackie was saying about that. I didn't know exactly where that came from. I thought a lot of that was connected to hiding my blossoming sexuality, because I did turn out to be gay, and that's not because I was perpetrated upon by men or boys. When I was 17, I met a girl who became a close friend of mine, and she shared a story about being sexually molested by her father. And I was horrified. I had no idea what that horror was about, but I entered into therapy in my 20s when I was becoming alcoholic. And years after I'd started therapy, one day I blurted out, and I'm not going to identify the person or relationship, but I identified that someone who I had been close to and had trusted as a child molested me. And I've later come to have flashbacks that haven't made much sense to me. I must have been very, very young. And this person told me not to tell and that it would feel good. What really freaked me out was that 16 years ago, my mother said to me, "My biggest regret is that I never called the police when you came home in a panic." And I could feel this fear welling up within me. It made no sense at all, but it was a panic attack. And I said, "What are you talking about, Mom?" She said, "You came home one day from school, you'd taken your shortcut, and you said some man said to you that if you tell anybody what I did to you, that I will kill you and your parents." And I said I was going, she said she was going to call the police, and that I told her, or I begged and pleaded with her, not to call. And she didn't call. And when she told me the story, I could see the shortcut that I took from school, and all I could see were a pair of black shoes standing in this field. I have no memory of what happened after that, but every therapist that I've seen has told me that I was sexually abused. So I don't know. It makes me feel kind of crazy, but all I know is that the terror was incredible. And as I've told the story several times over the years, I've started to discharge from it. I think the effect for me, which happens to many victims of childhood trauma, be it sexual or otherwise, is that they go into addiction. And my primary addiction was sexual addiction, and I've talked about that on the show before. I was reading about people with sex addiction and how more often than not they're victims of physical, sexual, or emotional abuse and neglect. And that seems to have been the case for me. I'll say that it took me, my life history took me to some very dark places. And the sexual addiction was a very painful piece for me. Now, I've recovered from alcoholism. I started that journey 32 years ago. And it was like a miracle when the compulsion to drink was taken from me. And I truly attribute that to a power greater than myself. I had alienated myself from God, but not from any spirituality. However, I came to embrace what was a loving God, somebody who, not somebody, but a power that loved me unconditionally. And I worked a lot with affirmations, and I had some wonderful sponsors, both in AA and in a sexual addiction 12-step recovery program. And they helped affirm for me that I did the best I could each step of the way. And I had a hard time accepting that in the beginning because my self-esteem was down the toilet. I didn't feel worthy. I was consumed by shame. I was addicted to shame, and I was addicted to excitement. And to me, the sexual addiction piece had two components. In a sense, I was a perpetrator and a manipulator of other people as if they were toys for my pleasure. And likewise, I was victimized. I was raped by a man, and it was not a pretty picture in any sense of the word. But I want to tell people that there is hope, that there is recovery, that there is a sense of rediscovering your true self, recovering those fractured pieces of yourself? Because my life was, it was totally disintegrated. I was not integrated. I led the double life that Jackie was talking about. I had thought about prostituting myself, but did not do that. And it's neither here nor there. There's absolutely no judgment. I've known a lot of people who've gone down that path and have become friends with them. And, you know, it's amazing what trauma can do to people and break their spirits. My spirit is complete today. I feel a sense of wonder at being alive. I'm a living miracle. There doesn't seem to be any reason that I should be here, but I'm here for today to tell my story. And I've never talked about some of these things in public either. And it's a little bit difficult to tell the story, but much less difficult than it's been in the past. I've done about 20 years of therapy, over 30 years of 12-step recovery, and I help people today. I help people by sharing my story in different venues. I've written my autobiography, as you know, Kat, and that's been a very healing experience for me. I've experienced some wonderful measure of recovery from sexual addiction. But, you know, I've got a ways to go in terms of freeing myself from addictive thinking, from euphoric recall. And I have been in that place for years in my past, and I truly believe I'll come to that place again. Those thoughts don't occur to me very frequently, and it is somewhat difficult for me to relate to my former behaviors. And so that's a mark of recovery. I will say this. I think that it is important for people to talk, to discharge, to forgive, as Jackie was talking about. I went through a forgiveness exercise for the person that I trusted. I never confronted this person because by the time I was ready to take that step, this person had Alzheimer's disease. And so it would not have served any purpose. But I have known a lot of victims who have found it very liberating to confront their perpetrators. So that's one road that people can go down. I just haven't had that experience, and I don't know if it's a healthy one or not. But I will say that the biggest thing that helped heal me was to forgive myself and to affirm for myself that I was a victim, that I was powerless under those circumstances, that I'm a beloved child of God, and that I am worthy. And I feel that it is so, so important to forgive yourself first before you even think about forgiving the perpetrator. And I have done that. I've released him. He's since deceased. And, you know, I don't have any ill will toward him, but I will say that I had no desire to be around him once I blurted out in therapy that he had molested me. So that's a big piece of my story. I'm reintegrating myself. I'm true to myself today. I'm only as sick as my secrets. And I appreciate every aspect of myself today. I re-entered therapy to deal with the fallout from sexual addiction and how that's affected my relationships. And it's proving to be a very healing thing for me because I didn't realize that I was still carrying some shame and guilt. And the difference between guilt and shame is guilt is something you can do something about. Shame is toxic, and it tells you that you're unworthy. Shame told me that I was bad, and I was not bad. I was a lovely child who had an experience that no child should have to have. And so that's my story. I don't know if you have any questions for me, Kat. And I don't know if Jackie would like to share anything else, but that's my journey towards recovery and reintegrating myself.
I'm just reading here about substance abuse problems that begin from childhood or adolescent sexual abuse. And it shows that 3 to 4-fold increase in rates of substance abuse and dependence in children who've experienced this kind of abuse, being drug abuse is the most more common than alcohol abuse for adolescent child sexual abuse victims. And the average age onset is about 14 and a half years compared to children who've not been victimized in youth. So that's interesting. So I don't really quite understand what they're saying there, that children, you know, really young children who've been abused don't tend to pick up drugs and alcohol as early as youth do who've been abused. And maybe that's because at some point during the early childhood, there may be, for some people from the research that I've uncovered, some people have a sense that this is what normal people do. They don't realize that it's abnormal behavior until they're much older. And other people know that it's not normal behavior, but it's like drowning. They cannot get out of it. They cannot stop drowning either. And from what I've read, there are a lot of people who, as you said, David, you disassociated from your body. You left your body. And I've seen interviews with people who've said that they've put their spirit into the wall and left their body during the abuse, which is quite highly traumatic response. But at the same time, you know, when you think about how amazing we are as human beings and how we can find resilience, then you can see that this is a great coping mechanism, though it doesn't now work in adulthood when you're no longer the abuse victim. I also want to reflect on how both of you have found lovely partners along the way, that you're in your journey. You've gone from finding relationships that mirrored the dysfunction that you had in your childhood and youth, but then you've also at some point made a decision to have a lovely partner, to find somebody who wasn't like that. And Jackie mentioned that her third husband was quite a nice fellow. And I know that you've had a long-term friendship and relationship at times with Al, David. So it doesn't mean that you're out of the running of finding a lovely partner. If you choose to go on the healing journey, that opens the door. Would you agree? Is that correct? That if you actively, consciously choose to heal from this, it does open the door to a happy life?
I absolutely do. I believe that it requires an attitude of optimism. It requires a lot of self-love, and it requires just letting go. And again, forgiveness is a key piece in that. It's all about love and forgiveness. And I just want to reaffirm for people that may be struggling with these things, you know, it's all a misguided, as far as the sexual addiction goes, it's a misguided attempt for love and looking for love in all the wrong places. And it's an attachment-related trauma that can often lead to this kind of behavior. And for me, I have let go of most of that trauma and have come out the other side, and you can do that too.
And it can, the risk factors for people to find themselves in lower socioeconomic circumstances are quite high because of child sexual abuse, academic difficulties, display cognitive abilities that are below the 25th percentile, drop grades, and increased chances of dropping out of school. So, you know, this sort of abuse can impact your life massively. And then if you go on to have children, you're set back yourself. So then they are set back because you're set back. So for Jackie to have worked hard to become financially successful for herself and for her child, she's bucked the trend there quite a bit. And, you know, you should be proud of yourself, Jackie, even though you said that you did some things that were a bit shady and difficult to reconcile with now that you've come out of the whole nightmare of it. You know, the fact was that you were driven to feel better, and by doing so, you wanted a better life for your child. And that's really, you know, that in itself is important. I know that we say that the pathway to hell is paved with great good intentions, but if we don't have good intentions, we can't find a way out into the healing which you have gone through. And so people who are listening who have gone through this, or they know somebody who has, take the time to be compassionate towards the other person and to look into the history behind the abuse. There's more than the abuse. I just read a post by a dear friend, but I'm not going to read it out because she only posted it to her friends. I did ask her to either call in or listen today. But she said that her abuse as a child does not define her. It is not who she is. And I think that that's the greatest thing that we can have from this. Would you agree, David and Jackie, that the abuse that you experience as children and young adults, it does not define who you are?
I would agree. Absolutely.
Yes.
Jackie?
Yes, I definitely would, yes.
Jackie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Did you guys mute me?
Her microphone is live. I don't know if she's still with us or not.
I'm here.
Well, I just want to thank you, Jackie, for sharing your story. It really has been important. And the one thing that I would say to yourself and to myself and to anybody who's listening is that, first of all, kudos to you for doing the work, and kudos to me. It does take work to recover, and it's not an easy path, but it is so worthwhile. And I would encourage anybody who's been a victim to seek help, because you don't have to do it alone, and chances are you can't do it alone. So reach out for help from somebody that you feel safe with, be it a friend, be it a therapist, be it some kind of 12-step recovery, whatever it is that you find safe and loving, that's the road to go. Jackie, are you still with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I didn't have you on speaker. Go ahead, Jackie.
I'm here.
Okay.
I would definitely agree with what you're saying, David, and definitely the work, you know, and let's not forget that you and I, for many years, you know, there's a huge fear piece in all of this on many levels, actually, many different layers. And I just would like to tell anybody who's listening that, yes, there is definitely hope. You are loved. You are worthy. You are very special in your own right. This is not your fault. But that forgiveness, self-love, they're keys. Please find somebody that you think you can trust. Please don't hold this in. David and I, we held this in the secret for years, and I would encourage people, please come out. Don't hold it in. Tell somebody that you feel you can trust. I don't feel shamed. I don't feel guilty, although it's taken me many, many years to get to this point to where I'm telling my story live for the world to hear, for my daughter to hear this broadcast, for friends to hear this broadcast. This was huge for me, and I just want to say that there is so much to look forward to, and the work is most definitely worthwhile. And we are the warriors that carry the love and the shield, that we're out there helping the people that maybe don't feel safe or that aren't sure. We are there for them to help bridge them to their healing.
Thank you, Jackie. And Kat, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I just want to say one more thing before we finish the show, and that is if you know that you've been abused as a child and you've not dealt with it, as Jackie said and as David said, speak up if you can. But also look at the general health that you've experienced over your lifetime, because there is a greater risk of people who have gone through sexual abuse to have physical complaints as well as mental health complaints greater than people who didn't go through sexual abuse. Trauma, childhood trauma in general, will create a higher experience of physical disease as you grow older. So it's very important that you look after your physical health and your mental health, especially as you're going through the recovery and the healing process. Make sure you exercise. Go to a dietitian and get a good diet plan. Follow it. Meditate. Reconnect with your spirituality. Reconnect with positive humanity. Even if that means stepping away from everyone in your life at the moment and going and doing something new that's positive, reconnect with positive humanity and seek peaceful circumstances. Find situations and circumstances that are peaceful. For example, if usually on a Saturday night you go out, stay home. Find circumstances that are peaceful and become more and more still. The still mind is the mind that is able to far greater deal with the inner turmoil. When our mind is distracted and moving around and jumping from one situation to the next, the inner turmoil has a greater grip on the personality and therefore creates more dysfunction in the person's life. So quieten down your life and deal with it in that mature way, and you too can find the kind of peace that David and Jackie are discussing.
Thank you, Kat. I'd like to end the show with a song by Brian and Jen Johnson that says, "You're going to be okay after all these years." It's coming from YouTube, and here it is. You're going to be okay.
If you look at every person with a credit score over 800...
Sorry about that.
It's not...
Well... For whatever reason, that's not playing, and I'm so sorry. It's a beautiful song. Check it out on YouTube. It's "You're Going to Be Okay." And with that said, I think that we can just close with a moment of silence for all of those people who've been traumatized, and offer up a prayer to the universe that they may find healing, hope, and recovery.
Please join us after the show on the Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards on Facebook. You can post your thoughts on today's topic discussion, and I will be posting the song that David wanted to play, as well as the website that I took a lot of statistics from, and the Australian website Brave Hearts. I will post all of them on our Facebook page for you to look at your own discretion. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Kat, and thank you, Jackie, and thank you for joining us on, and anybody else that's listening. Good night.